the president has admitted to asking the president of Ukraine to take actions which would benefit him politically. The actions of the Trump presidency revealed the dishonorable fact of the president's betrayal of his oath of office, betrayal of our national security, and betrayal of the integrity of our elections. Therefore, today, I'm announcing the House of Representatives moving forward with an official impeachment inquiry. I'm directing our six committees to proceed with their investigations under that umbrella. The president must be held accountable. No one is above the law.
Good morning and welcome to American View. We have a very busy broadcast today. It's an important day in American politics. Yesterday, the president responded to Nancy Pelosi's call for impeachment. That was on Tuesday. Now we're seeing the aftermath of all of that. So we're good to be with you here on this Tuesday morning or Thursday morning.
Thursday morning.
I'm Ben Dietrich.
And I'm Alex Nestor.
You're listening to American View on Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM. So we are hoping to speak with Henry Olson in just a few short minutes or later on in the show. We're awaiting a call from him. In the meantime, we want to go through all that's been happening here with the impeachment hearings. So first, I want to play some clips for you. We're going to start with Nancy Pelosi from 1998. Why that? Why don't you have a listen and decide for yourself?
Today, the Republican majority is not judging the president with fairness, but impeaching him with a vengeance. In the investigation of the president, fundamental principles which Americans hold dear, privacy, fairness, checks and balances, have been seriously violated. And why? Because we are here today because the Republicans in the House are paralyzed with hatred of President Clinton, and until the Republicans free themselves of this hatred, our country will suffer. I rise to oppose these unfair motions which call for the removal of the President of the United States from office. The independent counsel knew that the president was exonerated when Travelgate, White...
All right, see, here you have Nancy Pelosi. Wow. And, you know, honestly, you could play that clip today from a Republican and you would believe that literally she was talking about President Trump. I mean, it's crazy, don't you think, Alex?
Yeah, I think it's wild. I was going to say it sounded almost exactly how I sounded yesterday.
So, yeah, it's right. So we're going to talk about this some more. We have word here that Henry Olson is going to be patched through here in a short minute. So we're going to get Henry Olson. He is a columnist for The Washington Post, and he also works for a couple of centers in D.C., so we're going to talk to him shortly. So, you know, that was during 1998, of course, when Bill Clinton was being impeached by the House. And you see there that Nancy Pelosi was very against it. It's kind of interesting because it's very rare that you have two sets of impeachments so close to each other in history. Mm. And we get to see and compare the two, especially since they're opposing parties and how they interacted. It's going to make room for lots of hypocrisy.
Yeah, and I'm sure what's really interesting about it, too, is that it's backfired on the opposite party, who goes to file the articles of impeachment, goes for the impeachment process. And back in 1998, it did not fare well for Republicans. And they ended up losing their House majority, I believe, in the next election.
Very, very true. And so, you know, history says that going into these impeachment talks is not good. Now, there is some differences, though, that we need to discuss. We want to explain this entire story. The first thing we want to explain is that that this time Nancy Pelosi is not calling immediately for a vote to begin the impeachment proceedings on the House floor. Why is she not calling for a vote? Well, she's not convinced that she has the votes to actually get a vote to start impeachment proceedings. So instead, she is asking committees, several committees, to begin investigations. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting the way in which they're doing this, because it does suggest, A, she does not have the support of the American people. B, she doesn't even have the support of enough fellow Democrats to do this. The dam has broken, though. And that's the truth in this story. You know, there's no denying here that Nancy Pelosi, for the longest time, has tried to avoid what happened on Tuesday. She's tried to avoid the Democrats from formally beginning impeachment proceedings because she knew from her own experience how this could damage their chances in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was very interesting. I was just thinking this morning that she was adamantly against impeachment just a few months ago. And I wonder why after... and she wanted to file articles of impeachment before the transcript was even released of this phone call between President Trump and the Ukrainian president. So I just wonder how she changed, it seems, so quickly over something that she didn't even really know. She didn't know what exactly had happened over this phone call. So why the change? I don't understand that.
Yeah, it's... I think what happened was this phone call really just kind of pushed certain Democrats over the top, where she was getting so much pressure from members in her party that have really started to dominate the messaging and the messaging of the party. I mean, you have people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, and now presidential candidates as well. What do you do when you have your presidential candidates saying they should impeach the president and yet the House does nothing? She got away with it for a while. They made the decision to begin impeachment proceedings before even hearing the transcript. Mm-hmm. The most interesting part about this story, one of the most interesting parts, there's so many interesting parts, is that the president has been completely forthcoming about it. You know, as soon as it came out, he basically moved to release the full transcript of the call.
Which was unprecedented.
Yes. And we are going to read this call for you, by the way. So if you're just joining us, you're listening to American View on Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM. Check out our Facebook page, American View WFH, for some great interview content and other coverage. But today we are going to read you the transcript, big portions of it, so you can hear for yourselves and decide as Americans what you are to make of this. But if you are just, you know, trying to understand what happened, basically, I guess we should explain that too. So when Joe Biden was vice president of the United States, he asked Ukraine to fire a prosecutor who they had claimed was corrupt, but had also been in the process of investigating his son. So they asked to fire this prosecutor. When he fired the prosecutor that was basically investigating his son, people didn't really say a lot. And then later on, what happened was now... President Trump comes along and he calls the Ukrainian president, asks the Ukrainian president about this investigation, among other things. He also asked him about the Russia interference in the election to get to the bottom of that. And he asked him, you know, hey, do you know what happened here? Because this sounds really weird. This sounds really messed up. That basically Joe Biden's son has been doing business dealings with both Ukraine, with both Russia, with China. And nobody really knows the details of those dealings.
Yeah, I guess I can't speak much because I'm not entirely sure of what Henry Biden has been up to. Hunter Biden has been up to. But what I can say is the double standard here is very, very obvious, and it's rather appalling. Things that we know have happened versus, you know, filing articles of impeachment over a conversation when they did not even know the contents of the conversation. I don't get it.
Yeah. So I think, you know, what they're hoping for and what they're betting on is that once these impeachment proceedings start and they get to the investigation, they get to the trial, that somehow the American people will, you know, be moved by that and will decide to take the sides of the Democrats.
But moved by what?
Yeah. I don't.
But by what?
Well, they put on the charade.
What do they have?
Know? It's
sure.
Like what they did with Brett Kavanaugh. The thing is, though, I don't really see... I mean, the Brett Kavanaugh thing didn't really work on the American people either.
Like, no.
It actually backfired on them. They probably could have won more seats in the House. They probably could have kept the Senate or took the Senate if they had played their cards differently. And yet they didn't. And so, you know, this drama and, you know... When you have a party that has been tried to impeach the president several times already, and then they come on, Nancy Pelosi comes out, like we heard at the beginning of this show, and she makes a big deal about how, you know, the president has violated the Constitution. What part? Where? I'm taking a constitution law class right now, and the professor always tells us, you know, whenever we are reading case briefs to describe the specific part of the Constitution that is in question. What part of the Constitution is in question here? Is it treason by the president? Because I don't see that. I just don't see that.
Yeah. Well, I don't see anything either. And I guess my bigger question is, you know, where, like, what evidence do we have? None of these, I mean, the Kavanaugh, I'm trying to impeach Kavanaugh, there was nothing backing that. I mean, the person who brought up these, they weren't new allegations. First of all, these allegations had, we had known about these for a while, but I think his name was Mark Steigler. He said he couldn't even recall if this had actually happened or not. So we have that. Then we have the Russia Gate, as it's now being called. Nothing from that. And now Ukraine. So what is going on? I mean, there's no evidence.
No.
Anywhere.
Yeah. It's absolutely crazy. So, you know, we're going to... Henry should be joining us here shortly. If you're joining us, you're listening to American View on Radio Free Hillsdale. So, you know, on the other side of this story, we're now raising the question of basically what's going to happen with this investigation of Biden and his son. And, you know, I think that we're going to see this. We're going to see this really kind of threaten the former vice president's chances in 2020, depending on where this story goes. Now, Vice President Biden went on TV as soon as this story broke, basically, about the phone call on Saturday, and he was very angry. And he said the president had abused his power and that, you know, how dare he go after his son? How dare he use political power for political reasons? I mean, and saying that he had been unfairly treated. And I just kind of laughed because A, he sounded like he was whining. B, does he not see the irony here at all? I mean,
no.
Honestly, where is the irony?
No.
You know, how does he not see that A, President Obama basically abused his power all the time for political means, whether it was, you know, having the IRS target conservatives or whether it was, you know, wiretapping members of the Trump campaign using FISA warrants. Mm-hmm. In ways that shouldn't have been done. And he got away with it just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody seems to care.
Right. Well, Ben, you know, I personally am not the biggest supporter of Trump by any means, especially when it comes to perhaps him as an individual. But yeah, all of this is just wildly not fair. He's the one who's being unfairly treated, I think, here.
Yeah, so I'm getting word now that Henry Olson is about to join us. He's at the Hillsdale College Kirby Center in Washington, D.C. We're going to patch him through now, so we should have him on in just a moment. Let's see if we can get him on. Good morning, Henry. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Hi, Henry. So thank you for joining us. You're on live with the show here in Hillsdale, Michigan. This is Henry Olson on the phone. He is a columnist for the Washington Post. He also works for the Ethics and Public Policy Center. Henry, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
So give us the rundown in your view, because, you know, we've talked to you on before on the show, and you actually made some great predictions in the 2018 election. We talked to you the night before. You did a great job predicting there what the effects, what would happen the next day. Here, what do you think the effects of this impeachment proceedings could possibly be on the American electorate in 2020?
Well, I think it's way too early to say. There are so many things we don't know yet, and those facts are going to determine what's going to happen. I think there's a couple of things we do know, and that is that people who are already supportive of the president, based on what has been released right now, will see this as just an extension of what they will call the witch hunt, whereas people who have already always despised the president we'll see it as yet another example of why they believe he's unfit for office. That will take out about 80% of the electorate. And the key is going to be the people who are in the middle or waver on the president. And I think there's probably going to need to be more than is out there right now, but we can't say for sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is kind of, according to history, would you not agree that usually if there isn't the evidence to support these impeachment proceedings, it would support the person who's being impeached, that party, rather than the people that are basically trying to impeach them, as we saw with Bill Clinton?
Well, that's certainly what happened with Bill Clinton. And the question is twofold. One, I think views are much more polarized than they were 20 years ago. And secondly, this is not quite as relatively innocent as it was with Bill Clinton. It's more of a public function rather than use lying to avoid a private sin. But if there's not more than this, I think there's a good chance that the president and the Republicans could be marginally helped, but it's way too early to say.
Right. And where do you think the public support lies right now, with the Democrats, the Republicans on this issue?
On this issue, the polls have been this issue meaning impeachment,
yeah.
The polls have been very clear that it lies with the Republicans, and the question is whether this is enough to significantly change that. Again, my guess is it's not, but there's so much that is coming out every day. We don't know if there'll be something new that will change that.
Right. So given the information that you have now, and I know this is kind of a hard thing to do, but if you were the Democrats, how would you proceed if you wanted to win majorities in 2020, win the presidency? If you were the Republicans, what would the central message be, I guess I would say, for both parties?
Yeah, so with respect to this issue, if the Democrats want to pursue this issue, what they should do is go slowly. What they should do is build a case. They should assemble as much evidence as possible. They should appear as much as possible to be finders of fact and not rushers to judgment. Now, that's going to be extremely difficult for them because many of them have been arguing for impeachment since the day president was inaugurated, but that's what they should be doing. What Republicans should be doing is playing a two-fold game of offense and defense. The offense is by expanding the field, which is this is no different than anything that the Obama administration did. And I mean not just the Hunter Biden question. There's the question of the hot mic where President Obama was caught in March of 2012 leaning over to the Russian president and saying, I can be more flexible on things like missile defense if you give me space during the election year. Well, that's about as quid pro quo as you get.
Right.
I think that what they'll need to do is say, this is politics as usual. And you can't criminalize one side. And then what they should be doing is poking the holes in any facts that come out.
So, Mr. Olson, you made a point earlier about Trump's base versus the Democratic base and having some in the middle. How large of, how much of the American population do you think is in the middle? Because from my perspective, it would seem as if Trump has a lot of supporters who won't, ever stop supporting him. But on the flip side, there are a lot of Democrats who, like you just said, from day one, from even before, day one of Trump in office, they've been trying to get him out. So how much of our population is in the middle there?
Well, in the middle, there's two ways to look at it. One is people who are softly committed to either the president or opposed, people who say they're somewhat disapprove of his job approval rating. And that's somewhere between 5% and 15%. Not huge, but that's the decisive block. Then there's the second group of people who are a little bit larger, and they're people who say they oppose the president, but they also oppose impeachment. And that is somewhere around 20%. So somewhere between 10 and 20% of Americans are people who are the persuadables in this, and that's the target both parties need to go after.
Mm-hmm. And I know you wrote an article recently about the amount of Republican support that Trump has right now. So, and do you think that's, you said that's unwavering? Do you think that this impeachment or anything new that the Democrats could throw at Trump, could anything impact that?
Not the hardcore, not 35% to 40% of the Americans, but again, there are, just like there are soft opponents of Trump, there are soft supporters. Not very many, but again, perhaps crucial. And the question is the same question that was asked in the president investigation of President Nixon, which is, what did the president know and when did he know it? If it emerges that what he did was more than what he did in the telephone call, there are people within the administration who will basically turn coat on him, then that could be something that would affect people on the margin. But right now...
Real quick, I'm sorry. We're almost out of time here, and I want to ask you, do you think that... Have you read the transcripts yourself I'm just curious.
I haven't read the whistleblower because that hasn't been released, but I read the phone transcript.
Yes. And so what are your thoughts real quick in a minute or less or 30 seconds or less? What are your thoughts on the transcripts themselves? Do you think that this is as big of an issue as Democrats are making it out to be just based on the information we have now?
It's inappropriate, but it's not impeachable.
Right. And that seems to be what a lot of people are saying. But do you think the Biden, this issue could come back to bite Biden in the end? I mean, do you think there's any chance that this could actually become an actual issue for Biden, or do you think it's just dismissed because of the way in which it became public and became talked about?
I think this could be a very bad issue for Biden, because the thing is that the president is not going to play defense. The president will play offense and defense. And that means continually reminding people that Biden's now only son basically engaged in trading off the family name to provide a living for himself for a long, long time, and that raises an appearance of impropriety. And if there's anything more than that, then I think Biden's going to have to withdraw.
Henry, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you taking the time for talking to us.
Thank you very much.
So that was Henry Olson. He was calling us from the Kirby Center in Washington, D.C., our D.C. campus. He is a Washington Post columnist, as well as he works for the Ethics and Public Policy Center in D.C. He's got some great knowledge on all that, and we thank you for listening to American View. We're going to be back shortly with more coverage on the impeachment talks, as well as discussion of what President Trump has been doing at the United Nations General Assembly. Thanks for listening on American View. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Welcome back to American View on Radio Free Hillsdale, 101.7 FM. It's good to be with you on this Thursday morning. My name is Ben Dietrich.
And I'm Alex Nestor.
All right. So we're talking about the decision by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to move forward with impeachment proceedings. And what about? Well, there is a whistleblower who basically released a phone call or talked about a phone call that they thought was inappropriate by the president with the Ukrainian president. And we're going to go ahead and read some of the transcript for you. You're going to hear it live on the air. Alex Nestor will be the president of Ukraine. And I will be President Trump.
It's the closest thing I'll ever get to president. So is this
That's
right here, people.
True. That's not
this
true.
This right here.
Alex Nestor 2020. She's announcing in a couple of hours. So we're going to read through this. And then after that, we are going to play some of the interview that yesterday the President Trump had with reporters, or the discussion he had with the president of Ukraine, and hear what they actually had to say yesterday. So you'll get all of that here on America View, where Hillsdale meets the nation. Be sure to check out our Facebook page. Listen to the full episode if you missed the interview with Henry Olson. It's got a lot of insider knowledge, or just brains. All right, so why don't we go ahead, and we're not going to read the full thing, but we are going to read a fair amount of it. It
would an take abridged about, version.
Yes. It would take about 20 minutes to read this entire conversation. But I will go ahead and start. Congratulations on a great victory. We all watched from the United States, and you did a terrific job. The way you came from behind, somebody who wasn't given much of a chance, and you ended up winning easily. It's a fantastic achievement. Congratulations.
You are absolutely right, Mr. President. We did win big, and we worked hard for this. We worked a lot, but I would like to confess to you that I had an opportunity to learn from you. We used quite a few of your skills and knowledge and were able to use it as an example for our elections. And yes, it is true that these were unique elections. We were in a unique situation that we were able to achieve a unique success. I'm able to tell you the following. The first time you called me to congratulate me when I won my presidential election, and the second time you are now calling me when my party won the parliamentary election. I think I should run more often so you can call me more often and we can talk over the phone more often.
Huh, that's a very good idea. I think your country is very happy about that.
Well, yes, to tell you the truth, we are trying to work hard because we wanted to drain the swamp here in our country. We brought in many new people. Not the old politicians, not the typical politicians, because we want to have a new format and a new type of government. You are a great teacher for us and in that.
Well, it's very nice of you to say that. I will say that we do a lot for Ukraine. We spend a lot of effort and a lot of time, much more than the European countries are doing, and they should be helping you more than they are. Germany does almost nothing for you. All they do is talk, and I think it's time, something that you should really ask them about that. When I was speaking to Angela Merkel, she talks Ukraine, but she doesn't do anything. A lot of the European countries are the same way. So I think it's something you want to look at, but the United States has been very good to Ukraine. I wouldn't say that it's reciprocal necessarily, because things are happening that are not good, but the United States has been very good to Ukraine.
Yes, you are absolutely right. Not only 100%, but actually 1,000%. And I can tell you the following. I did talk to Angela Merkel, and I did meet with her. I also met and talked with Macron, and I told him that they are not doing quite as much as they need to be doing on the issues with the sanctions.
So we're going to go ahead and skip ahead here a little bit, as it doesn't really refer to the issue at hand. But you see, this is the reference, what you just heard here, by the way. You're listening to American View. You are hearing Alex Nestor and I, Ben Dietrich, perform the conversation between President Trump and President Ukraine, according to the transcript. You just heard the so-called, you know, smoking gun, where he references aid to Ukraine. That's all he says. It's not in context with the Joe Biden situation. It comes at the very beginning of the call. And frankly, it sounds quite ordinary as to how you would expect a president to discuss things with his agenda that has been clear to the American people about getting Europe to pay more of their fair share. So the president continues later in the call, and he asks for a couple of favors. The first favor he says is this. It's in reference, what you're going to hear now, to the interference of the Russians into the U.S. election. It has nothing to do with Joe Biden, but we're going to read it anyway. I would like you to do us a favor, though, because our country has been through a lot, and Ukraine knows a lot about it. He's referencing here Russian interference in the election. I would like you to find out what happened with this whole situation with Ukraine. They say CrowdStrike. I guess you have one of your wealthy people, the server. They say Ukraine has it. There are a lot of things that went on, the whole situation. I think you're surrounding yourself with some of the same people. I would like to have the Attorney General call you or your people, and I would like you to get to the bottom of this. As you saw yesterday, the whole nonsense ended with a very poor performance by a man named Robert Mueller, an incompetent performance. But they say a lot of it started with Ukraine. Whatever you can do, it's very important that you do it if it's possible.
Yes, it is very important for me and everything that you just mentioned earlier. For me as president, it is very important, and we are open for any future cooperation. We are ready to open a new page on cooperation in relations between the United States and Ukraine. For that purpose, I just recalled our ambassador from the United States, and he will be replaced by a very competent and very experienced ambassador who will work hard on making sure that our two nations are getting closer.
And so it continues down here. We're going to skip ahead. Good, because I heard you had a prosecutor. Now he's referencing to the prosecutor that Joe Biden fired, or asked to be fired, excuse me. Good, because I heard you had a prosecutor who was very good, and he was shut down, and that's really unfair. A lot of people are talking about that, the way they shut your very good prosecutor down, and you had some very bad people involved. Mr. Giuliani is a highly respected man. He was the mayor of New York City, a great mayor, and I would like him to call you. I will ask him to call you along with the Attorney General. Rudy very much knows what's happening, and he's a very capable guy. If you could speak to him, that would be great. The former ambassador from the United States, this woman was bad news, and the people she was dealing with in Ukraine were bad news. So I just want to let you know that. The other thing, there's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people want to find out about that. So whatever you can do with the Attorney General would be great. Biden went around bragging that he stopped the prosecution. So if you can look into it, it just sounds horrible to me.
I wanted to tell you about the prosecutor. First of all, I understand and I'm knowledgeable about the situation. Since we have won the absolute majority in our parliament, the next prosecutor general will be 100% my person, my candidate, who will be approved by the parliament and will start as a new prosecutor in September. He or she will look into the situation, specifically to the company that you mentioned in this issue. The issue of the investigation of the case is actually the issue of making sure to restore the honesty, so we will take care of that and we'll work on the investigation of the case. On top of that, I would kindly ask you, if you have any additional information that you can provide to us, it would be very helpful for the investigation to make sure that we administer justice in our country with regard to the ambassador to the United States from Ukraine. As far as I can recall, her name was Ivanovich. It was great that you were the first one who told me that she was a bad ambassador, because I agree with you 100%. Her attitude towards me was far from the best, as she admired the previous president and she was on his side. She would not accept me as a new president well enough.
So the letter goes on, and they talk about this prosecutor, and that's basically the gist of references to Joe Biden. So, you know, I think it's important for Americans to decide for themselves on this issue. I want to make something clear, though. This is, you know, whether or not you think the president should have brought this up or not, this is not treasonous, which would be, I think, the only way in which you would say that somehow he violated his oath by having this conversation. There is no sense that President Trump's loyalty to the country is gone. And in fact, I think it would suggest quite the opposite. In this conversation, it seems that he's standing for a lot of the issues that he ran on, in the sense that he is requesting that Europe pays them more of their fair share. He seems to be employing an America First policy, and he's seeking out corruption of the deep state. That's an element of the story that we should really talk about, is the corruption aspect of both Biden and you know, what we saw with people like Hillary Clinton and their interactions with the Russians. I mean, there has been so much more questionable behavior from politicians that have been around for a long while with the Russians that has been in the public eye relatively. And we've seen nobody outraged about it. And suddenly this phone call is what is the trigger that calls them to be removed from office. It just doesn't make any logical sense to me.
No, it really doesn't. And I think this goes back to what we were talking about with Mr. Olson earlier, is from the very beginning there. Well, the Democrats, from the very beginning of Trump's presidency, have been out to get Trump. They have not accepted that he was elected. They have not accepted that he is president. On the flip side, President Trump, from the very beginning, has been seeking to drain the swamp. Excuse me for, you know, using that now cliche phrase, but to get some of these people out of D.C. who have been there for way too long. I think that scares a lot of people, perhaps even some Republicans too, that have been there for a long time. But I think, you know, Trump ran on that when he was elected. People were quaking. They were very afraid of that. And now he's doing it.
Right. And so now I want to turn, I would agree with that, Alex. I want to turn to a clip of President Trump describing what he is, you know, basically the vice president and what he did, and responding to how seriously he's taking the impeachment talks.
Not at all seriously. We had a perfect phone call with the president of Ukraine. Everybody knows it. It's just a Democrat witch hunt. Here we go again. They failed with Russia. They failed with recession. They failed with everything. And now they're bringing this up. The one who's got the problem is Biden. Because you look at what Biden did. Biden did what they would like to have me do, except for one problem. I didn't do it. What Biden did is a disgrace. What his son did is a disgrace. The son took money from Ukraine. The son took money from China, a lot of money from China. China would love to see, they can think of nothing they'd rather see than Biden get in, because they will take this great deal that we're about to make, and they would really have themselves a deal for themselves. Let me just tell you, what Biden did was wrong.
All right. So that was President Trump talking. This was on Tuesday when that came out. So that was earlier. You know, earlier in the conversations. Now let's turn to what the Ukrainian president had to say when him and President Trump met at the United Nations this week.
It's a great pleasure to me to be here. And it's better to be on TV than by phone.
Yeah.
I think you read everything. So I think you read text. I'm sorry, but I don't want to be involved to democratic open elections of USA. No, you heard that we had, good phone call. It was normal. We spoke about many things. And I think, and you read it, that nobody pushed me. Yes.
So that's the key phrase in that conversation there. I think nobody pushed me. Not helping the Democrats' case there. What did you say, Alex?
No. Sorry, I also couldn't do his accent very well. That was, that would have made it.
Quite an accent there. Yeah. Well, we don't want to culturally appropriate
upset our
liberal friends. No, you know, the more this story has come out, and, you know, we said on Tuesday in our Tuesday show, I said, we're not going to talk about this until Thursday because just so much more information is going to come out. Now we kind of have a fair idea about this phone call. And it's like, you know, it's not looking good for anybody that they base so much of their fight on this. And it's like, we saw the flop with the Russian collusion story. President Trump kind of had a point, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like the girl who cried wolf, you know, or the boy who cried wolf. At some point, you just find it hard to take these people seriously. And I think the American people are getting to that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I have 2 points to make here. First, let's not forget, and I suppose I should say this is all alleged, but ties between Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, Hillary and Bill Clinton and the Ukrainians, that's not something that should be ignored here, first thing. I guess the second thing,
It's okay. I wanted to actually interrupt there's another story we want to mention here, and that's the double standard, basically, that we've seen by the Democrats.
Yes.
The fact that, okay, Democrats, you know, going back to kind of what you were saying, on the other side, they actually sent letters, the senators, a couple of Democratic senators, specifically, there was Patrick Lee of Vermont, as well as Robert Menendez of New Jersey, the corrupt Robert Menendez that we are so familiar with, Richard Durbin of Illinois. They wrote letters to the Ukrainian prosecutor general saying that they were concerned about investigations that had to do with the Mueller probe. So with concern to the Russian interference in the election. Now, this is okay for them to write the Rush. Of course, this is completely fine because they are talking to the Ukrainians about, you know, getting Trump. So that's okay. If the Democrats are using their political power to talk to the Ukrainians to go after the president, that is acceptable. Sure. But what is not acceptable is when the president, you know, casually in a phone call mentions, you know, hey, have you looked into what happened with Biden? Like, this doesn't sound great. That's impeachable. We should throw him out of the office. But when three senators write a letter, you know, three senators, they get away with it completely. And they even reference in this letter, you know, they're basically the aid that the United States has given and almost include a threat in there about, you know, their relationship with Ukraine if they do not cooperate with the United States. Okay, I'm not saying that these guys should be impeached either, you know, frankly. I think this is just regular, this is the deep swamp in D.C. But this is what we're seeing, and there is such a double standard. Do not believe for a moment that this is about the Constitution. Do not believe for a moment that this has anything to do with truth on the left. I'm sorry, but we lost truth. You know, frankly, I stopped believing that the Democrats were going to stand for any sort of justice when they went after Brett Kavanaugh to the extent that they did a year ago. And now it's a kangaroo court. I'm sorry. I just don't think the American people are going to buy this. I want to play real quick. President Trump, he responded to the United Nations in a very subdued term about this and the way the media has been covering his own events. The way the media has been covering his own events at the United Nations. He had a great speech to the United Nations General Assembly. We're going to cover that because I don't think other networks have covered that enough. But first, I want to hear the rest of what President Trump has had to say about these talks and the impeachment.
With all of this tremendous work that we've done, the press doesn't even cover it. And the Democrats did this hoax during the United Nations week. It was perfect. Because this way, it takes away from these tremendous achievements that we're taking care of doing, that we're involved in New York City at the United Nations. So that was all planned, like everything else. It was all planned. And the witch hunt continues. But they're getting hit hard on this witch hunt because when they look at the information, it's a joke. Impeachment for that? When you have a wonderful meeting or you have a wonderful phone conversation, I think you should ask. We actually, you know, that was the second conversation. I think you should ask for the first conversation.
Hey, what do you think? What do you think of subdued Trump, Alex? I think that was subdued Trump. Quiet, soft voice.
It was kind of nice. It was kind of nice. I guess
it's like he's on tranquilizer.
Right, right. Well, I feel like with impeachment and everything, I feel like my head is inside of an echo chamber, and whoever is yelling the loudest, and in this case, it's often for, you know, impeachment, it just sticks there, and you can't hear anything else. But it's strange because I feel like Trump's soft voice almost cuts through that. Which is a nice change, Ben. It's a nice change.
Yeah, when he says, you know, impeachment for that. You got to relate to him. I don't know. You got to feel.
No big hand gestures. No, I mean, he was using his hands, but it was not.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Now, I think that we cannot understate here. You kind of mentioned this with the interview we did with Henry Ellison earlier in the hour, but you know, the American people elected the president into office. He is the legitimate president. From the beginning, we have had a party that has denied that he deserves to be in that office. They have said he is not their president. They have had resistance marches in the street. They have basically called for violence against members of his administration. There has been such a level of resistance to him and such a clear, you know, path forward that they are going to attempt at all odds to remove him from office. We had Democrats, you know, days after he was elected say they were going to impeach him. You know, how it's such a threat to our republic when that happens, when you basically to say, you know, because of what we think, because of our ideas and the way we think government should be run, we are going to write off half of what the country thinks. Mm-hmm. And we are going to tell half of the country that not only are you deplorable, but you don't deserve to have a voice in who our leader should be. And you know, I think that there is a bigger story here that if you are not a supporter of the president, you need to understand, which is that President Trump, since the day he came into office, has been against what I would say is the deep state. And it's not just Republicans or Democrats that he's against. He is against people that have been part of politics for a long time, that have used politics for bad reasons, that have not necessarily been in the interest of the United States. They've used the U.S. government for their own personal gain, to increase their wealth, to increase, you know, relationships. And the American people have not been prioritized. And, you know, I think Victor Davis Hanson, who we're going to have on, you know, later this month, hopefully, and we're going to talk about his book, The Case for Trump. It really outlines a lot of this. I mean, we see today, how did this story completely begin? It began when this phone call was released by a whistleblower that most likely was left over from the Obama administration. I mean, he's up so much that literally there's nothing he can say. This is a private conversation he had with a foreign leader. We would have never heard about this happening in the Obama years or before that. To have conversations leaked with foreign presidents? When was that a thing?
Yeah. I said earlier, and I don't like using the word because I feel like it's a hot button word, but it's unprecedented. And what I mean by that is exactly the definition of unprecedented. Truthfully, something like this has not happened before.
And frankly, it angers me. You know, I have not always been a supporter of the president. And, you know, I think what has made me come around, and I think that what this is probably the thing that fires me up the most, is the fact that I am so disgusted with the other side. And I am so disgusted at the fact that they will stop at nothing to take down, you know, President Trump, to take down anybody that's associated with it. And there's just so much I could say on that. I do want to give the President Trump, a chance to talk about what his message was to the world. Loved this moment. Let's hear part of his speech at the United Nations when he basically reminded the world, hey, yeah, so that globalism thing, I know you guys are all really into that here at the United Nations, but that's not how it's going to work out. Because you remember when I was elected and nobody thought I would be elected? Yeah, patriots across the world, whether it's Boris Johnson in the UK, Sebastian Kurz in Austria, or President Trump, are going to take the story and drive our future. Let's hear what he had to say at the United Nations.
The free world must embrace its national foundations. It must not attempt to erase them or replace them. Looking around and all over this large, magnificent planet, the truth is plain to see. If you want freedom, take pride in your country. If you want democracy, hold on to your sovereignty. And if you want peace, love your nation. Wise leaders always put the good of their own people and their own country first. The future does not belong to globalists. The future belongs to patriots.
Amen.
The future belongs to sovereign and independent nations who protect their citizens, respect their neighbors, and honor the differences that make each country special and unique.
All right. So we're going to, you know, when he talks, I think there's worthy, some of what he said there is worthy of some explanation. When he talks about peace, when he talks about, you know, what you need to do to love your country if you want freedom. I think that really gets to the heart of the way other people have seen the world and in the way they've led. I mean, what is the alternative to that? Is that if you think that you want peace or freedom, that the way you have to do that is to not necessarily look out for your own people's interests, but look out for these global interests, you know, for global objectives like ridding the world of climate change, right? So you say, okay, I want to save the world. I'm going to rid the world of CO2 emissions by calling on other nations to join me. I'm going to not necessarily consider my own people's interests first because I'm concerned about this global problem. When you do that, are you actually, you know, you might have good ends, but is that actually the best means towards solving your objectives? You know, is it? Or is it really just going to end up screwing your own people and then not even helping you get to the objective you were trying to get to in the first place?
Yeah. Not to go too far down the rabbit hole, but I think the United States too is blamed for a lot of things that, like our CO2 emissions. We actually produce a lot less CO2 than countries like China and India. And I think, you know, Trump kind of going against China right now is an interesting thing to do. So
it is. So thank you for listening to this episode of American View. Unfortunately, we are out of time.
Darn.
So we're going to get back to it, though. Thank you for listening to American View on Radio Free Hills, 101.7 FM. We'll be back next Tuesday with more coverage. So check us out on Facebook, American View, WRFH. Have a great day.